The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. The Massachusetts Joint Committee on Mental Health, Substance Use, and Recovery held a hearing on harm reduction sites. They were considering two bills, H. 1712, an act relative to preventing overdose deaths and increasing access to treatment, introduced by Representative Dylan Fernandez, and S. 1134, an act relative to supervised injection facilities, introduced by Senator Joseph A. Boncour. We're going to hear some of the testimony from that hearing. The first person we're going to hear from is State Senator Cindy Friedman.
Thank you to the chairs and members of the committee. I am here today to testify in support of S. 1134, an act relative to supervised injection facilities, sponsored by my colleague, Senator Boncour. As you know, S. 1134 is now being discussed by its sponsor and several of my colleagues as a bill that could be redrafted based on the Harm Reduction Commission's recent report and recommendations, a commission which I had the great opportunity to serve on. I support any state efforts at harm reduction, and specifically today to support the pilot program for safe consumption sites. As you know, the 2018 opioid treatment bill signed into law last August created the commission to study harm reduction activities, including the feasibility of implementing a harm reduction site pilot program in the Commonwealth to help curb the opioid epidemic, save more lives, and get more people into treatment. We included this important provision in the bill because despite all of our efforts to date to combat this enormous public health crisis, an average of 5 people die from an overdose each day in the Commonwealth, and this is just not okay. And the increasing prevalence of deadly fentanyl further heightens this crisis. Frankly, it's become clear that the tools and strategies we've employed to date, while helpful, are not enough. We have a moral and public health imperative to consider any and all evidence-based harm reduction strategies. We cannot simply keep doing the same over and over. The Harm Reduction Commission was chaired by Secretary Sutters, and commission members included Representative Roy and myself, DPH Commissioner Burrell, and the mayors of Boston and Cambridge, along with experts in the fields of addiction medicine, psychiatry and psychology, law, public safety, plus those with lived experience. And after months of thoughtful discussion, investigation, and soul-searching, we developed a set of meaningful evidence-based recommendations like access to clean needles, fentanyl testing strips, increased outreach to those on the margins of substance use disorder and co-occurring mental illness. These all have been shown to have a very clear public health benefit and should be rolled out on a large scale and more broadly across the Commonwealth. You've heard all of this in previous testimonies and the recommendations of the Harm Reduction Report, and I'm very pleased that we as a Commonwealth have begun to take meaningful steps to implement several of those proposals. Now, these are all very important steps to take, but these strategies are not enough. We can't stop and claim success. All of the evidence and studies the Commission reviewed and all the firsthand reports from safe consumption sites in Canada and Europe, where there are decades of experience and data available, all point to safe consumption sites as an evidence-based harm reduction strategy, and we can't afford to dismiss it. Look, I know this is difficult for some people. The idea of safe consumption sites is uncomfortable, but it is proven to save lives. Then we have a moral obligation to at least give it a try. It can't be about our feelings. It has to be about the evidence and what tells us works. What does the evidence on harm reduction sites tell us? Tells us that a harm reduction site where one can use and consume substances in the presence of healthcare workers who can immediately intervene to prevent overdose absolutely positively saves lives and reduces health issues associated with intravenous drug use. At the first harm reduction site in North America, which opened in Vancouver in 2003, there was immediately a 35% reduction in overdose deaths in the immediate vicinity, compared with 9% reduction in the rest of the city when they applied other harm reduction strategies. The evidence tells us that the availability of clean needles at safe consumption sites reduced the transmission of diseases like hepatitis C and HIV. And the evidence tells us that these harm reduction sites can be so much more than a safe place to use substances. Instead, they can and should be a place where healthcare workers can develop a trusting relationship with those they seek to treat by offering a wide variety of additional services, including drug tracking, blood-borne virus testing, injection site wound care, initiation of medication-assisted treatment for substance use disorder, and referrals to health and social services. And let's be clear, we must keep people alive first before we can help them. And providing Narcan, which is critical, is not enough to keep everybody alive. This epidemic is far from over. People are still dying, and we need to consider all the evidence-based and informed interventions that have proven track record of saving lives. There must be multiple doors to treatment, all with a very, very low threshold of entry. For this reason, the Commission made clear in its published recommendations that the Commonwealth should take the steps necessary to create a pilot test to impact the safe consumption sites here in Massachusetts. And as I mentioned earlier, we must continue to evaluate all of these programs. And the recommendations in the context of the outgoing, ongoing public health crisis that we find ourselves in. And while the deaths from overdoses are down in some areas, this crisis is far from over, and in several of your communities, in fact, the death toll rises. We've still had 938 confirmed and estimated opioid-related deaths in the first 6 months of that year, so that doesn't include July, August, and September. We continue to be in the midst of a public health crisis, plain and simple. We need to use every tool in the toolbox in order to address it, and it would be irresponsible if we did not explore every opportunity as a means of tackling this epidemic, and that includes establishing safe consumption sites. Lives are at stake. I ask every member of this committee to both recognize the magnitude of this epidemic and very seriously consider this very important bill. We cannot hold back in addressing this crisis. This epidemic is not only affecting those with substance use disorder, but their children who are flooding our foster care systems and creating huge challenges for grandparents and family members. It is ravaging families and causing untold heartache. No one has not been affected. So I strongly urge, plead, beg the committee to report the bill out favorably. Thank you very much.
That was Massachusetts State Senator Cindy Friedman. She was testifying before the Joint Committee on Mental Health, Substance Use, and Recovery in October in a hearing on harm reduction sites. She was testifying in support of two bills, H-1712, introduced by Representative Dylan Fernandez, and S-1134, introduced by State Senator Joseph Boncour. Both of them regard supervised injection facilities. You, of course, are listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. I'm the editor of Drug War Facts at drugwarfacts.org. Now let's get back to that hearing, shall we? There's a lot to listen to. Let's hear from Gary Langus.
Hi, I'm Gary Langus. I'm a resident of Gloucester, Massachusetts, and just a citizen. And thank you, sir and Madam Chair and the committee for hearing us today. I am here today as a witness. I've witnessed the heroin world. The first overdose I witnessed was 53 years ago, okay? And I've lived through it. I'm still living through it today. I've seen a lot of people pass on, including family members. The list is just too long, and you've heard it all. You've heard it here today. You've heard the science. You've heard the numbers about the stigma. You know, it's about time we need to really care about all of us here, not just a few. You know, where did this stigma come from? Did it come from us? No, I think it began, you know, a lot of the drug-related stigma started back in the 1800s, 1870s, passing the first opioid laws in San Francisco, and it's progressively gotten worse. For the last 70 years, people who use drugs have been treated like subhuman beings, called every name in the book. There is no junkie. That's something that somebody came up with, somebody that's, you know, that lays a stigma on us. And, you know, harm reduction. When harm reduction came to this country and it started happening with, like, small needle exchange people, it wasn't like legislators. It wasn't medical professionals or public health professionals that stood up and said, you know what, we're losing all our friends from AIDS. What are we going to do? Do you think there were laws passed to protect those folks? No. We had to go out there, and people had to do things illegal for years and years to get them done. And that was in the middle 80s. My wife was HIV positive. I remember I took part in a lot of the stuff back then. And have we gotten better? Sure. The stigma remains. The stigma's, you know what? It's going to be there. It's going to be there. Like, you know, when I get laid out, you know, there's going to be somebody there talking about, like, the junkie hanging down Shirley Ave. I know that. But there's other folks out there, our sons, our daughters today, you know, my grandchildren, that are experiencing this right now. And we have something, we can undo a lot of that stigma that started with legislation back in the 1870s into the Harrison Act and all of that good stuff that have, the only option for a drug user was back in the 50s was like Kentucky and in Texas. You know, there was two places. And like, you know what, so we have come some far, but we still treat people who use drugs like criminals. Guess what? We're not all criminals. You know, that's a label that's been put on us through legislation. And it's time. We have time now to legislate our way out of some of this stuff. We're not going to arrest our way out of it. We're not going to legislate our way out of it. But we can work on providing services for a group of folks that have been neglected for 100 years.
Thank you.
That was Gary Langus. Gary was testifying before a hearing of the Massachusetts Legislature's Joint Committee on Mental Health, Substance Use, and Recovery. Next up, let's hear from Carl Shortino. Carl's the Vice President of Government and Community Relations at Fenway Health. He's also a former member of the Massachusetts Legislature.
Next, I'd like to call up Carl Shortino for the edification of members. Carl Shortino is a former colleague.
Good morning, Chairman Sear, Chairwoman Decker, members of the committee. Thank you for your time and attention to this issue this morning. I'm here in support of House 1712 and Senate 1134. Fenway Health is a community health center that offers a wide range of services to people struggling with substance use disorder. And I want to share with you a little bit about our perspective on why we're supporting this legislation. As a community health center, we're able to provide a full range of services. The medical department provides primary care, support for infection control, and a whole range of medical-related services. The behavioral health department can provide counseling, support, access to treatment referrals, and in between the two, we have medication-assisted therapy. We provide MAT to our patients, and those numbers are only growing right now. More importantly, I think, than either of those services, we also provide harm reduction services. The Access Drug User Health Program provides clients with a range of harm reduction program services, including HIV STI testing, Hepatitis C testing, treatment navigation, syringe exchange, nursing care, integrated behavioral health care, and more important than any of that, a friendly face. These are staff that build trust on the front lines, on the streets of the greater Boston area, with people who inject drugs to give them an access point to treatment services that we provide at Fenway. So what's the problem? The problem is we still have, despite services like those that we provide, 2,000 people on average per year dying in the streets of Massachusetts. That exceeds the death rate from the AIDS epidemic at the height of the AIDS crisis. And despite the really valiant efforts of this legislature of this committee, of the governor, that death rate has barely budged. We've celebrated, to some extent, small decreases, but overall, we still have around 2,000 people on our streets dying. So what do we need? We need a comprehensive approach to the opioid crisis. There are four prongs to the intervention that we should be deploying. Number one, prevention. Number two, treatment. Number three, law enforcement. Those three, this legislature has taken on full throttle. The fourth pillar of an intervention for the opioid crisis is harm reduction. The budget this year, with the leadership of members of this committee and others, invested over $5 million in harm reduction, an increase this year. That's excellent. And yet, with the harm reduction services that we currently are able to offer, we still have to tell patients and clients when they are ready to use, they have to leave our doors. They have to go into the streets, into public bathrooms, into homes, into unsafe injection facilities. We urge you to use your authority. As you've heard here this morning, Massachusetts has never waited for the federal government to take action to be a leader on a whole range of issues, including in public health. I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I'd like to recognize Representative Dan Ryan, who's joined us. Questions from the committee. Chair Decker.
Thank you. It's really great to have you here. I miss you as a colleague, but I am so deeply grateful for your work and the role that you've taken on since leaving. Can you tell us a little bit more about what we're also seeing, is, if I understand correctly, pockets of the state where they're experiencing high rates of overdose along with higher rates of new cases of HIV and AIDS?
Sure. So as was mentioned by Representative Fernandez, for many years we saw a decrease in HIV transmission among people who inject drugs. In fact, that was one of our Massachusetts miracles, one of our success stories we told around the country. From the late 90s, when we established syringe exchange programs, until 2014, we saw an almost 90% reduction of HIV transmission among this population, down to a low of just about 24 cases in 2014. 24 cases statewide in 2014. That's nearly zero cases of HIV transmission, a real success story. And what's happened since 2014? You've heard about the outbreak in Lawrence and Lowell. Roughly 150 cases, the number has changed a couple of times, going up. Number of cases identified over, certainly over 125 cases, around 150 cases of HIV just in those communities alone in that outbreak. That's alarming, to say the least. Boston, we identified a cluster through our program, AHOPE and others in the city, of over six cases. That number has grown in the last several months as well. Worcester has seen an outbreak. We're seeing signals of HIV upticks across the state and communities, a reversal of the trend towards getting to zero. So we have a lot of alarm in that arena. Hepatitis C, as was mentioned, we are now seeing thousands of new cases of hep C transmission among young people who inject drugs and people of all ages who inject drugs. Hep C, we saw a baby boomer cohort that was going to age out over time or be cured once the cures came online. The number of young people and people who inject drugs that are getting hep C today far exceeds the baby boomer generation of hep C from 20 and 30 years ago.
I want to thank you, and I want to thank you for also bringing this to my attention early on in the session. And I guess I continue to struggle with, if you could talk to us more about tying this to rates of usage, to the issue of safe consumptions, and finding it alarming that while we are acting quickly to address the vaping crisis, and I do think it's a public health crisis, but if you look at the numbers compared to whether it's overdoses or the alarming numbers of new individuals who have contracted HIV and AIDS, the fact that this isn't public, this isn't front page news, I mean, that I find alarming. And if you could just talk a little bit more about tying the story into why you're here today.
Absolutely. So when I think about the history of Massachusetts public health interventions, the AIDS crisis has always been our success story. We took a leading role in showing the country how to respond, removing stigma and doing services in a whole range of ways, including ways, as was mentioned, that were considered illegal under federal law because we had people dying in our streets of AIDS. We now have more people dying of opioid-related overdoses than that crisis at the worst days of the AIDS epidemic. When you look at what our harm reduction programs currently offer, syringe exchange provides sterile equipment. testing, provide some intervention if someone has an HIV diagnosis to get them into treatment. If someone's treated on HIV and they're undetectable, they are also untransmittable to other people, which is also part of prevention. When you look at what's happening now with fentanyl in the system, there's no heroin on the streets of Boston or Massachusetts. Every bag, every supply is laced with fentanyl. We know that from the testing that we do, that our clients do themselves, I should say. And when you have fentanyl in the system, it is actually a harder high that causes more overdoses, but it also crashes sooner. So what does that mean for someone that injects drugs? It means they're injecting more frequently. They need more access to clean syringes on a more regular basis. We cannot keep up with that demand, sending people off into their communities with a supply of syringes for how much they need to be injecting today with fentanyl in the system. This legislature has done really great work expanding harm reduction programs. We've invested in syringe exchange programs. We went from only 5 programs statewide 3 years ago to over 30 communities today that have approved syringe exchange. That's a remarkable improvement. And yet most of this state, most people that are substance use disorder, people who inject drugs, do not have access to one of these programs readily available. And even when they do geographically have access, it's not necessarily a place they can go with the frequency that they might need, especially when dealing with barriers of homelessness and housing and mental health issues that are all in the mix of what these individuals are facing. The last thing I'll say on that point, I speak with humility about these issues because the people that have the real expertise, as I know you know, are the people with lived experience. And for this committee, I urge you to give them the respect that I know that you will, because their experiences today on the streets of this community tell me, as an individual, why this issue is so important for us to move forward.
That was Carl Shortino. He's the Vice President of Government and Community Relations at Fenway Health, a former member of the Massachusetts Legislature as state representative. He was testifying at a hearing on harm reduction sites before the Joint Committee on Mental Health, Substance Use, and Recovery. He was testifying in support of 2 measures which relate to supervised consumption sites. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We're talking about harm reduction. We're talking about supervised consumption sites. And we're also talking about the progress that drug policy has made. Here's Michael Botticelli.
Chair Decker, Chair Sear, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of harm reduction sites. My name is Michael Botticelli. I'm the executive director of the Graykin Center for Addiction at Boston Medical Center and the former director of drug policy for President Obama. Boston Medical Center has been a longstanding national leader in substance use disorder research, education, and treatment. In 2017, BMC established the Graykin Center for Addiction to accelerate innovation in care delivery and maximize the impact of addiction services. While Massachusetts has seen a decline in overdose deaths, they remain tragically high, with close to 2,000 deaths. Alarmingly, non-fatal overdoses continue to rise. Overdose deaths in Massachusetts have been increasingly related to the presence of illicit fentanyl analogs, accounting for the vast majority of overdose deaths. Since fentanyl is much more powerful than heroin and prescription opioids, it precipitates a quick onset of overdose death. Coupled with data that show an increase of deaths occurring in isolation, our current overdose prevention strategies are insufficient to meet this changing landscape. This has also affected our campus in a very dramatic way, as we have seen a significant increase in overdoses in our own bathrooms and have taken the unprecedented step of installing motion detectors to make sure that we are preventing overdose deaths. In addition to drug overdose deaths, the epidemic has caused a significant increase in cases of viral hepatitis and increased incidence of HIV associated with needle sharing, threatening to erase years of decline in HIV incidence. While the causes and drivers of this epidemic are complex and require a comprehensive response that expands prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery support services, additional approaches that reduce the harms associated with this epidemic must be a critical and necessary part of our efforts. The establishment of medically supervised harm reduction sites would fill a critical gap in our current efforts, especially given the scientific consensus on their effectiveness. I know you already heard from the Massachusetts Medical Society, but the existing research is rigorous and has been endorsed by many experts and published in peer-reviewed journals, including The Lancet, the New England Journal of Medicine, providing solid scientific evidence that safe consumption facilities achieve positive outcomes. For example, we just heard in Vancouver, British Columbia, utilization of sites reduced opioid overdose mortality by 35% and significantly increased access to treatment. Given the magnitude and scope of the epidemic and the devastating toll it continues to take on families and communities across the Commonwealth, Boston Medical Center supports the establishment of such facilities. On behalf of our clinicians who focus on addiction and treating our patients with kindness and compassion, we support the establishment of such facilities consistent with the findings of the Harm Reduction Committee. So thank you for your time today to testify. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Becker.
First, I want to say thank you for your service to the country and thank you for what you continue to do today here in Massachusetts. What would you say, given your experience both at the federal level and now at the state level and on the ground, to those who raise legal issues at the federal level as being an obstacle or being a red flag to put a pause on moving forward on recommendations that are being made by the medical establishment as a way of dealing with a medical crisis?
Sure. By full admission, I am not a legal expert as it relates to federal law. And there are many people who I'm sure are familiar with this committee who can navigate the tricky legal landscape. I will say this, and I'm probably a little bit out of my element here, but at the federal level, they have a tremendous amount of prosecutorial discretion as it relates to how they enforce federal law. And I think that this could be an instance where they could also exercise that jurisprudence. I will also say, again, kind of not being a legal expert, but having kind of a state-sponsored, legally sanctioned site could provide some level of legal protection as it relates to a state-sponsored facility. I go back in kind of our areas around kind of the clinical and scientific expertise, and it's just, I think most of the people on this committee agree that the scientific evidence is pretty clear in terms of the effectiveness in it. So, I do think that we need to exercise. I think Massachusetts has been a leader in this epidemic as it relates to state services, and I think this is another example where Massachusetts can demonstrate federal leadership in continuing to respond to the epidemic.
Thank you. So if I'm correct, I think what I hear you saying is there's, because we obviously have various opinions on the what the legal implications would be or won't be, but what I hear you saying is that the interpretation of legal implications should not be the barrier to medical recommendations on how to best address an epidemic.
That's coming from kind of the clinical background. That's what I think we would recommend.
Thank you.
That was former drug czar Michael Botticelli testifying before the Massachusetts Legislature's Joint Committee on Mental Health, Substance Use, and Recovery. The hearing was on harm reduction sites. Michael Botticelli was testifying in support of H1712, an act relative to preventing overdose deaths and increasing access to treatment, and of S1134, an act relative to supervised injection facilities. For now, that's it. You've been listening to Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.